Good morning, good afternoon, good evening if you are in a different time zone. My name is Adrienne Lusa, and today I am here again for another session of our Ask Me Anything on funding and investment for the biotech sector, specifically targeting biotech entrepreneurs in Africa, or those who are interested in the biotech landscape in Africa. Welcome, and I'm also not alone, joined by one of our resident guest speakers, Gianmarco Melfi, who is a partner at OneBio Venture Studios down in Cape Town, South Africa. Hello, Marco.
Hi, Adrienne. Nice to see you again. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And today, I just want us to take a step back. So we are going to be focusing again on the pre-seed. You know, folks who are still in the pre-seed stage of their entrepreneurship journey. And we are going to be looking at something that must be very interesting to them, which is the investment landscape for pre-seed. So looking at everything around why you should be looking for outside investment and who you should be targeting and how you should approach them. So back to basics, and thank goodness that Marco is here, because OneBio Venture Studios is one, if not the only, VC firms that focuses on early stage biotech companies. So Marco, I don't know if everyone who's online today is familiar with the work you do at OneBio, but maybe take a moment to just introduce yourself and what OneBio does.
Yeah, with pleasure, with pleasure. So yeah, I'm Gianmarco Melfi. I'm a partner at OneBio Venture Studio. As Adrienne mentioned, we're a VC fund based in Cape Town, South Africa. We only invest in biotech. We're a biotech-specific fund. And as you mentioned, early stage, pre-seed and seed. We are currently deploying our first fund. We're actually very close to being fully committed and will be looking to raise additional funds this year and likely into next year as well. We've made about 9 investments to date, spanning a lot of different biotech spheres. I come from more of a therapeutics and diagnostics background, so my biases are out there, but we also do look at a number of other spheres, whether it be future of foods, different kind of agri plays, diagnostics, therapeutic, kind of anywhere where biology and data are merging. We're potentially interested and would love to have a chat. So, I think in a nutshell, that's what we're up to at OneBio Venture Studio.
Awesome. So, and from the basis of what you do at OneBio Venture Studios, what sort of investment criteria you think differs between biotech startups compared to, say, tech startups? Because we've seen in the last 5 years or so a boom in the tech sector, where there's been a lot of investment in the sector, and also, you know, a lot of companies that have really scaled, to say the least, and gone global even. How do you think, or what do you, in your experience, how does the criteria for investment in biotech startups differ from your typical tech startups, say fintech or the others, run-of-the-mill startups in the tech sector?
Sure, it's a good question. There's a particular space that obviously we're very interested in, OneBio Venture Studio, which is almost this merger between the two, where you'll have a kind of big data play involved at the early stages of your biotech venture. But that said, if we think of like the high level buckets of a tech startup versus a biotech, I think in the tech space, the kind of speed and route to market is often a lot shorter than within a biotech space. as soon as biology comes into the table, it's longer time frames and generally a lot more expensive. So I think that would be the kind of big factor that differs those two. If you, again, my bias is coming out, if you think therapeutics and diagnostics, well, therapeutics in particular, you know, people say you need around $1 billion in 10 years to get close. Whereas in, I think, a tech setting, whether that be fintech, as you mentioned, I think the route to market and the speed at which you could get something on the market is a lot shorter than that and may require a lot less capital in certain instances. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big differentiating factor, the need for patient capital in the biotech space and significantly higher burn rates, I think is fair to say, versus the tech sphere. But looping back to what I mentioned earlier, I think with the progresses in certain tech startups and certain applications in silico techniques, stats, bioinformatics, things coming on so fast there, leaps and bounds, machine learning, kind of advancements, AI, quote unquote. I think the merger between those two is becoming more of a norm, and more of a norm, hopefully, in the sense of where AI and machine learning or ML isn't being used as a bad word, buzzword, slap it on the back of your pitch deck and, oh, let's see if it gets someone's attention. More really kind of how are you utilizing these algorithms? Is this giving you an output that's that much more competitive? And we're seeing some very interesting cases where that seems to be the case. So we're very excited about that side of things.
And is that in your observation, is that helping to accelerate product development? Is that helping to make the biotech field a little bit more closer to the tech startups for all the reasons that you earlier mentioned?
Yeah, I think we're seeing the beginnings. Maybe. I think we're seeing the beginnings of that. I think with kind of tech approaches, they're kind of two big drivers. One would be speed, right? And trying to get to your proposed solution faster. But the other one that we, I dare say, are even more interested in is our ability to understand vast biological data sets and actually look at novelty, look at things that have not yet been explored, because frankly, perhaps the computing power, the ability to interrogate that data, ways of interrogating that data just haven't been done yet. So I think, if you think classically within a laboratory setting, I think there are a lot of advancements in terms of automation on record keeping and analyzing the data that you produce experimentally, and that should speed things up. But then, as I say as well, also in the kind of right from the beginning, exploring genetic space in different ways we've done before, exploring proteomics in ways we haven't done before, looking for novelty or new ways of tackling problems, I think is, as if not more exciting than only speed.
Yeah, I hear you talk about novelty in terms of maybe one of the things that will get you your attention as an investor, maybe. So I'm curious, are there other factors that you think make a biotech startup or a biotech idea early stage, more appealing to an investor in terms of commercial viability, in terms of return on their investment? Are there factors that really, you know, in your checklist you go looking for when someone comes to you with a proposed idea or a company to back?
I think we have a mental kind of checklist. We try to think as laterally as possible whenever we're engaging with founders. You know, we like to be surprised as well. You know, if you don't fit the tick box, that's not necessarily a bad thing if there's something else underneath the hood that's as exciting. So, you know, in terms of commercial viability, those kinds of questions, obviously, if this is a tech that a particular product or service is already kind of in mind that the tech would be utilized for, it's interesting at a pre-seed stage to obviously explore high-level commercial kind of feasibility. Let's say in a therapeutic space, if this proposed drug that you're going to develop is going to cost $1 billion a dose, that might be a bit of a flag. But if you can indicate why other pieces of tech being developed in other parts of the world are going to allow that therapy to be produced at a fraction of that cost in the next few years, then, you know, interesting. So I think from a commercial feasibility, viability side of things, obviously you've got a sense check in the early stages, but at a pre-seed stage, to be honest, we're more focused on team. I know I sound like a broken record on some of our sessions, but you know, a really strong team that's driven to solve a specific problem that they're going to interrogate in any way, shape or form they can to crack it, versus an idea. A great team wins over a great idea 9 times out of 10. So yeah, I think we keep a very broad kind of open mind. People that are kind of going off the beaten path and looking at tackling problems differently to others, whether that's a novel approach or how you'd like to kind of describe it is up to them. But yeah, kind of interrogating problems from the ground up or knowing what else is out there and coming at it slightly differently. It just shows that a founder's really thought about the problem. If your company pitches something that is very much in the vein of 7 other companies in the world doing that approach, there could be novelty within their approach. But if it's the same, we're not interested in building a kind of competing with other ecosystems and other companies across the world. You've got to be trying to do something 10x better or at least very differently and a chance of being 10x better. So I hope that gives a bit of a flavor of what we kind of think about.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And so you're talking about novelty or, you know, improving, and you also mentioned the team, the quality of the team that is going after this idea, this venture. And when it comes to the landscape of investors or investment in the biotech sector, so you are in the, I'll say, venture capitalist category, but who are the other types of investors that founders at the early stage could be seeking? Because you've mentioned before, one of the things that differentiates biotech startups from your typical tech startups is the cost as well. And so there is significant investment that needs to happen very early on sometimes, to even get to a minimum viable product. Who are the other types of investors? Who should an early stage company founder be looking to for investment, and why?
It's a good question. It's a broad one. I think at the early stages, just starting off with South Africa, of course, you know, OneBio, we're an early stage venture studio. We'd love to hear from those who are building in the space and see if we would be a fit. Angel investors and family offices are also sometimes kind of underexplored avenues at the early stages. Some founders are just not aware that those kinds of networks are out there. And there is a bit of a network building exercise to understand who those individuals are, who those entities are that could invest. So yeah, VCs, angels, and then of course, you know, early stage state grants are hugely important. As you said, you know, to get going in the early stages, some non-dilutive capital, some grant funding in the early stages to get your story together, to start maybe getting a little bit of pilot data together, allowing you to kind of pitch the venture with a little bit under the hood to start can be hugely helpful. And I know TIA do a lot of that kind of work, as well as, you know, organizations like CIFA. We were very lucky enough as OneBio Venture Studio to manage and disperse a CIFA grant allocation of around 10 million rand over the course of a few years. And we were able to write, close to a million rand each grants to early stage biotech companies, which they found hugely helpful. You know, to really get going and get prepped, and I'll go and raise your pre-seed. So yeah, invaluable. I think any startup out there would appreciate that some grant funding in the early doors can be very, very useful. And like I said, TIA, CIFA would be a good place to look and start. And then maybe a little bit more around kind of the angel side of things. Sometimes it can be quite daunting to figure out who these individuals are, and you kind of need to rely on your network. So, and reaching out to others in the space who've maybe engaged with a few angels, and then thinking about how you target those. It's a bit different to VCs. Generally speaking, VCs, you know what we do. It's kind of written on the tin. You know, OneBio, we're a biotech, early stage biotech investor. You know what you're coming to chat about. Whereas with angels, you could be a little bit unsure. So, you're looking at people, perhaps people who've had successful exits in the biotech space, you know, look at, search out for those individuals. They often are the ones, especially if they are founders with multiple successful exits, they might be looking to invest in the space, into the up and comers, if you like. And then in family offices, something to explore. One or two of our companies have had some success in this vein. In, you know, there's some family offices, especially in the biomedical side of things, who perhaps have had a family member or loved one who's experienced a particular disease, and are kind of driven from a emotional kind of impact point of view to try and make a difference in that space. So you might find a family office that's you know, looking to invest in the oncology space for a particular reason, or diabetes or any particular disease indication, because there's an attachment, there's an association to them specifically. So searching out those kinds of individuals or family offices could be a port of call.
Very interesting. And I'm just wondering, for all the reasons that you have mentioned, and looking specifically in our geography, you've mentioned some very good examples, Tia and Sefa, and as well as family offices and angel investors. Are you seeing any trends in, because some of the conversations I've had with founders on my podcast, for example, they seem to think that, you know, they have to go outside of Africa, outside of South Africa, in our case, to be able to get the investment that they need. Do you think there's a need for, I don't know, education, because it's not for lack of investors and angel networks in our geography, but do you think that there is a bias against biotech, particularly when it comes to investment? And if so, what would you say, you know, in a lingo that they understand of why that should change?
I think in terms of looking at investment overseas, I think that is essential regardless. If you think of a classic biotech play and the quantums of funding that need to be raised and successive rounds, right? Again, a difference between the kind of timescales and quantums needed in the tech space versus the biotech space. To be frank, South Africa doesn't yet have the ability to take, for instance, a drug all the way through to market. We just don't have the capital, the risk capital around to do that. So I think companies who are looking offshore from day one are probably doing the right thing. It's not discrediting looking in South Africa. Explore everywhere, I think, is the bottom line. You know, if you're building a solution to a global problem, there should be VCs out there interested in also solving that particular problem. And frankly, you're going to need those networks, larger funds, later stage funds that are just not present yet on the continent. You're going to need them, and you're going to want to start building those networks really early on. So I'd say, you know, explore everywhere. Obviously, tap into the local network. If you are South African based or sub-Saharan Africa or anywhere on the continent, come and tap into SA as best you can. But try not to ring fence it to just one geography. Really try it from the early doors. We've seen this in some of our portfolio companies. Some rounds, you know, finding a well-networked someone that can help champion your round. That is very well connected to VCs globally, can help close around within a matter of weeks with their network. So I think exploring it all is definitely very useful, very useful. And in the long run, you know, going to be essential. So why not jump in at the early stage?
Nonetheless, do you think that in terms of, I know you mentioned the availability of risk capital, or the lack thereof, to take, you know, the companies all the way. But do you think that is just a lack of it, or is there also a factor of not being well versed with biotech and what the benefits, the applications, the risk, the timelines? Do you think there's a factor of education that needs to also happen within these networks of investors to make it easier for them to consider or take more? Because I can imagine that if someone is starting out in South Africa and they have to factor in the effort and cost of building networks abroad, that's mm-hmm. why most of them then just relocate or register their companies elsewhere. And like I think in the last conversation we had with Dr. Pehane Vuyisile about, you know, where the grant funding will go, if there's a sense that it's not gonna, you know, be local and create local impact, that might also disfavor you from getting access to those. So it's a bit of a tightrope to navigate.
No, it is. And I think, an education kind of side of things is needed, you know, for, let's say, later stage funds on the continent mm-hmm. who perhaps haven't, or bigger organizations who haven't explored the biotech space specifically yet. I think it's hard to advocate for that and push for that at the moment, but, you know, a very worthy cause. I think the thing that will turn heads in time are, of course, exits and success stories in mm-hmm. this space. Mm-hmm. There have been one or two on the continent in the biotech space, one in South Africa not too long ago in Kappa Biosystems, a significant exit on the continent. Mm-hmm. I think a few more of those stories, and frankly, from an investor's point of view, you know, returning capital on capital, we need to see mm-hmm. that more regularly, and hopefully a few high profile, and then heads start to turn. So it is a challenge at the moment now. It is a challenge mm-hmm. for those on the continent. We hope that there are some other funds, I believe, that are trying to be raised and put together at the minute. We'd love to see those come to fruition. It's sometimes a bit of a lonely space. But exciting nonetheless for us at the Venture Studio. But I think it's hard. And the other kind of some companies come to us, and the kind of sentiment is, oh, but it's so much easier to raise internationally. And that's not necessarily the case. The grass is not always greener on the other side. It's a very challenging fundraising climate at the moment. It's tough out there everywhere. Yes, you may have access mm-hmm. to more VCs, more potential funders in other geographies, but it's not to say that it's a cakewalk in other parts of the world. It's tough at the minute. Mm-hmm. It's really tough. So I think, mm-hmm. digging your heels in, providing enough time to go out and fundraise, really reaching out to everyone. Just as a bit of an example, one of our portfolio companies who raised their pre-seed about a year and a half, 2 years ago, they spoke to about 75 plus investors over the course of 9 months. To get the round closed. So it's a lot of doors you got to knock on, a lot of no's to have to understand and take feedback where it's given to get there. So also just that perspective on it is tough. It's tough for everyone, but if you push your heels in and drive for it, it does happen. It does happen.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, not to put you on the spot, but if you were to start a biotech company today, say you have this really great idea or just an idea, you know, and that's the route you want to take, and maybe walk me through what would be your strategy in terms of getting funded from your experience, from, you know, your portfolio companies, all the missteps that they might have done and the successful strategies that they might have taken. What would you do if you had to start from any angle, whether it's agri or climate focused or health focused? What would be your strategy in terms of getting funded?
That's a good one. I love it. I'm in the hot seat. I think from the start, it's interrogating this idea, obviously thoroughly yourself, and one can do that, you know, in front of a desk for hours and hours and hours and days on end, but getting someone else on board with you that can point out any glaring omissions that you might have just looked over. So again, I'm sorry, I'm sounding like a broken record. Team, having someone else in the trench with you that believes in at least the overarching of what it is you're going to try and build. And that you can kind of hold each other accountable on, sense checking and sanity checking and probing and asking the tough questions, I think is hugely valuable. I mean, that would be my first start, probably mm-hmm. as important as the idea, if not more important. And then I, without getting too into the weeds, I think I know that we've got some got fantastic universities in South Africa. I was lucky to attend one. If you are thinking, if you're at university or have a piece of university technology or something's going on in your lab that you might want to explore, I think, you know, obviously you've got a campus network there. And one of the first kind of organizations I'd go to if I was in that side of things would, again, I'm not going to say One Bio every time, but yes, come and reach out to One Bio. But from a university point of view in university tech, I'd also reach out to the UTF. They do some fantastic work with early stage technology
UTF
out of universities.
Is... So that's
the University Technology Fund.
Okay.
So they invest in technologies spun out or technologies derived from universities in South Africa. They're a brilliant fund. Mm-hmm. We know them well. So I'd connect with them kind of off the bat. And then I kind of also spend time with your team looking internally at the network you already have to potential investors, to potential angel investors, potential family offices. Often if you kind of take a step back and explore your own networks, even if it's a friend of a friend of a friend mentioned he knows an angel, you know, follow up on that and ask around as much as you can. So yeah, that would probably be the starting point. If it's at that really early stage, that kind of pre-seed stage, applying for grants, getting applications in with TIER, getting applications mm-hmm. in through CIFA. Some of those applications can take an awfully long time. So get them in early and follow up. I think those are kind of the high levels that I'd want to get going. The last thing is to be kind of try and find a community that's also in this space that is trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. We're currently building a new offering, the One Bio Innovation Center, which is going to be laboratory space and office space for early stage biotech startups, which I think could be a nice kind of plug in. All these similar kind of questions or approaches or what these companies mm-hmm. are going through on a daily. So try and plug into community wherever you can. That can speed things up greatly as well. And it's tough building a biotech. It's good to be with those that are trying similar kinds of things that people think are crazy and trying things that are super ambitious. But if you get it right, you can really make an impact and do something big. So yeah, try and plug into community as best you can.
Okay. Thank you so much. I think that was very, very informative. I'm definitely going to replay this part if I'm trying to build a company and I will need the funds, but I think that was super, super, informative and unfortunately probably very specific to South Africa, but I'm sure that there are parallels. No need, because obviously we're speaking from the perspective of what is, you know, your experience, your knowledge. And I'm sure that in other countries, there might be similar institutions and grants or even reach out. I'm sure One Bio, like we've said in previous episodes, doesn't mind, you know, extending their reach outside of South Africa if it makes sense. And then, again, on the flip side of that question, what are some of the mistakes that you've seen people make early on when they're trying to get funding? Maybe three or so, like the big ones that will really just take you off course.
Let's think. What are the top three? I think if you're trying to raise pre-seed, I think not having enough people look at your pitch deck before you actively start to invest is a big one. Try and shop that thing around. I mean, pitch it to your uncle, your brother, your sister, people who aren't even familiar with the space, and see if they can help you refine. So I think really getting the pitch right before you go out actively looking at funders. There's also the approach of kind of approach the B list of funders in your mind first. Even if they're unlikely to invest, you ask for feedback. It's a known, you know, try that approach. So I'd say getting your deck really in order. Keeping up with investors in terms of like keeping them informed, turnaround times if they're kind of requesting docs or follow up calls. Obviously, you want to be there and be fully prepared. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to sound cliche, but just don't say quit. Just keep going. You're going to get a lot of no's. Don't let the first couple of no's derail you and drop your productivity. It's going to happen. It's par for the course. I know it's mm-hmm. tough and it's not fun, but yeah, you grit through. The first 10 is just the start to try and, convince people to invest. So I'd say those are probably my top three.
And on the details of the pitch deck, mm-hmm. are there any glaring things that will stand out for you in terms of what not to do?
Yeah, I think make sure that the cores are in there. What is the problem you're looking to address? What is your solution? And what is that associated market? If you can concisely convince an investor that you've interrogated these really thoroughly, that mm-hmm. goes a hugely long way. Mm-hmm. Getting down at a pre-seed stage, like unit economics of exactly what your solution, device, therapy, service is going to cost, fine to have in there. But we all know that is a bit of it's a guesstimation at this point. It's you've put a little bit of thought mm-hmm. into it, but you can't really assess right now. So I think hit the top tier buckets, problem, solution, and understand the market. Mm-hmm. and then everything else, depending on your company, depending if there are certain additional elements you want to add. But those three, make sure you really knock those out the park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying the economics, the details of, where is this going to land up, how much money we're going to make in so much time is not critical for early stage?
I think at a pre-seed stage, having a sense for sure, some kind of answer or answers in that vein for sure, but hanging your hat on any of those numbers at a pre-seed stage on a classic biotech, which, you might be looking at generating revenue in 6-7 years down the line, there's a lot of time in between that, and there should be or there would be a lot of inflection points and technical milestones you're going to want to hit before then. So I'd kind of emphasize the technical. What is it you're going to prove? What are the mm-hmm. what is the funding you need to prove said milestones, and you convince an investor that you believe if I hit these 2, 3, 5, 6, whatever the case is, inflection points or milestones, I should be in a position to raise my next round of funding. It's a cycle at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So that would be my approach.
Okay. That's very informative. And actually with your response now, I'm thinking you've talked about technical milestones that need to be reached. On an average, what sort of timelines are we looking at when, to be realistic, for all parties concerned, when you are starting out a biotech company? Let's say, what's the typical investment timeline from, say, seed funding to Series A and beyond?
It'll vary. Depending on the climate, you might structure it differently. At the moment, you really want to buy as much runway as you can. Raising for less than a 12-month period at the moment, I think, is a challenge just because of the climate. If you're going back out, you'll start engaging with investors again in 6 months, having closed your previous round. But traditionally, between seed and Series A, kind of 18 months, kind of runway, 2 year runway potentially. Really, all depends on the company and the circumstance. But mm-hmm. I guess you could also look at it from the top down. If you're in the diagnostics, therapeutics-y kind of space, mm-hmm. It's a long road. don't consider it a quick path that some tech startups can follow. It does take time. Raise kind of, if you can, the minute a pre-seed runway of about 18 months to give you the time to hit these inflection points. And of course, calculate your burn as best you can. You don't want to have 18 months, but not enough capital to really be charging at your milestones. I think seed to Series A, a 2 year runway isn't unheard of in this space. Mm-hmm. It's really going to depend on the particular company and their approach and the time.
Yeah, I like that you're bringing up things like burn rate and all this other technical stuff. I just want to make sure that I put a pin on it, that we will probably be getting into the weeds of that in future episodes of this, because we do want people to understand how to do that, you know, and sure. how to get that right. So just making a note of that. And one more thing I want to ask is, in your experience, are there some examples of successful funding strategies that you've seen employed by early stage biotech companies that you could highlight here?
I think different approaches, but you know, finding a lead investor is, I think, what everyone's going after in that in an early stage. Someone who's going to take the bulk of your initial round. But again, everyone's kind of chasing mm-hmm. that. Again, at One BioVenture Studio, if we convinced by the team and we're convinced by the tech, we are most often that investor. So. Finding a domain specific VC at the early doors can be really helpful. And then of course it's not just the capital that you're after. It's also the network, and getting you mm-hmm. plugged in then to angels and others who could try and fill the round and get it moving. So a strategy one of our portfolio companies was kind of successful in achieving was they engaged with a very well connected, European fund, small check size. He didn't take the lead on the round, but showed his commitment to the company by writing a couple of $100,000 check to get the ball rolling. And then, you know, the conversation was really all around, let me tap into my network and let's see if we can close this round out together. So kind of eyeing out a very well networked someone, even if they're not going to be the lead investor and take the bulk of the round, if their network mm-hmm. is going to help you raise the balance, can be hugely helpful. That was a great success story in a previous raise. It's not only capital that you're raising; you're also looking to leverage other networks. Those two are in balance when you're going out. Mm-hmm. So that would be something to consider or as a strategy.
Yeah. Okay, now that's very, very inspiring, by the way. and it also takes a weight off that you don't have to always figure it out by yourself. You could also leverage other people and other people's networks. So I think that helps to alleviate a bit of the weight if you then find that one key person, that lead investor. And something else I'm quite curious about is, what are some of the hot topics currently? I know this changes every now and then, but just for context, within our current times and era, what are some of the hot topics that you're seeing in terms of biotech and in the investor space? Because I know investors kind of have some of their favorite areas to focus on for one reason or another. Sometimes it trends up, sometimes it trends down. But what are some of the hot areas that you're seeing for biotech in the investors space or in the investors community?
It's an interesting time currently in terms of VC investing. We are still in a bit of a winter. It's the trends or where other NVCs are investing. Things are slow at the minute, so it's not a particularly clear as it would be in a kind of a boom or in a time in which VCs are really actively deploying capital. But I think trends, generally speaking, it's depends on the VC. But you know, from what we're excited about, you know, advances in sequencing, DNA sequencing, that is, and better understanding using machine learning approaches and AI for kind of drug target discovery or improved diagnostics is a space we're really, really interested in. Also thinking about, you know, the African context and South Africa, the biodiscovery plays or bioprospecting approaches. Again, we've got such mm-hmm. untapped biodiversity in South Africa that looking at novelty or interesting chemistries within kind of our biodiversity is always something we're interested in chatting about and looking at. We've got a number of our portfolio I've got their specific approaches there. I think those areas are very interesting. yeah, that would be kind of the top focus. And then, of course, the umbrella of where large data sets that you're going to derive and how to get the most value out of those data sets, the kind of machine learning approaches and different AI approaches being plugged in. I think there's a nice recipe there for some very interesting tech to come out.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the winter and in the space. Is there anything that, you know, your founders should be aware of in that context as they go out seeking investment? Any things that you can share for people to be aware of and just take into cognizance as they reach out for investors' attention at the moment?
Yeah, I think at a high level, being very aware of your burn rate, and I know we'll get more into burn rates on another episode, but forecasting enough time to raise, I think at the moment, is going to be really, really important for everyone. 9 to 12 months to kind of raise your seed round isn't unheard of. Of course, that's in addition to a founder's job in day-to-day operations and keeping everything running and keeping the kind of ship afloat. So factoring in enough time and runway to get the job done is really important. And again, the need to reach out to that many more investors, given it's kind of quite tough out there in the minute, is also going to be important. So yeah, I think at a high level, that's it. Factor in enough time and enough runway to get you there. The worst position to be in is you've got, you know, one or two checks in, but you're 9 months into fundraising and it looks like the cash flows are running to an end. You know, it's doing all that graft and not being able to have enough time just to get that last check over the line would be obviously really tough. So yeah, factor in enough time, reach out to as many as you can. And yeah, without getting into the weeds of valuations and that side of things, probably that's the high level for now.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Marco. This has been very, very informative for me personally, and I'm sure for our audience out there that are, you know, looking for funding for their biotech companies, especially at the early stage. And I was just wondering if there's anything that, you know, I haven't covered by way of questions that you think is very relevant to this conversation as to, you know, early stage biotech companies out there trying to get investment to get over to seed stage. Is there anything that I might not have covered in my questions that you think is very pertinent to this conversation?
I think you've done a fantastic job, to be honest, but one thing just to consider if you're at that kind of really early doors looking to raise pre-seed is building solutions to global problems rather than a very specific niche. I think it kind of can put you in front of a lot more investors with a solution and a problem that they understand, that they are aware of. So I know it almost sounds counterintuitive. It's like think big, even though it's kind of tough to raise at the minute, but it does, in our minds, it is the right way to go. A shot at trying to solve a really big problem puts you in better stead potentially to raise for that. Of course, if the solution is there, if the team is there, if the elements are there, rather than a kind of a smaller niche problem with an associated smaller market. And always think, you know, VCs at the end of the day, that we're looking for return on investment. So you've really got to be trying to take out a significant chunk of a significantly sized market. So that would be my other one to add.
Thank you so much, Marco. And just as a recap, for those who may be listening to this on a recording or just stumbling on this for their first time, we are in the fourth episode of this series. So initially we covered back in December, where's the money and how do I get it? Then we moved on to in February, common pitfalls in securing funding, so identifying and avoiding common fundraising mistakes. We've touched on some of those again today. And last month we talked about, April, we spoke about building investor relationships. We had a guest, two guests, because coming in from, now the name has gone off my mind. We had two guest speakers coming in to talk to us about their experience helping founders, you know, build relationships with investors. And today we were looking at understanding the investment ecosystem, especially focusing on early stage companies. Now, just to anticipate for our next episode, we will probably be covering more of a post-seed focus. So if you already have a raised seed and you're looking to scale, how do you quantify your market? And how do you go about market analysis and presenting that to potential investors for later rounds of fundraising? So I hope that this is helpful, and please do share with your networks. For those that you know that are thinking or considering getting into biotech entrepreneurship, we need more of those. And also for people who are, you know, interested in investing in biotech, the biotech sector, I think this could be informative, because we're getting a lot of insights from experienced investors like Marco, and also getting perspective from also the government side when we have Dr. Pehane here with us talking about how the Technology Innovation Agency, TIA, approaches investing in biotech. So I hope this has been informative, and thank you again, Marco, for making the time to join us on this conversation, and hopefully we will have you again here next month to talk about funding and investment. Keep your questions coming in. You can send me a private message, an email, so that when we do have our live sessions, if you can't be here live, I could always channel your questions to our speakers. On that note, I don't know if there's any last words from you, Marco.
Just a thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Adrienne, and thanks to everyone who dialed in. And yeah, do reach out if you've got any questions. Yeah.
Awesome. On that note, please have yourself a blessed Wednesday and a great week further. Bye-bye.